The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
You know, the stories will tell you that it was federal agents that led a sweeping campaign to finally shut down Backpage, but that's actually not true. It was a group of conservatives and a group of libertarians and a group of progressives and people that I don't have anything in common with that all got together and said, this is evil and has got to be stopped. Backpage, it's an online prostitution empire. But now feminists are outraged, in particular, the Women's March. Now, you'd think that an organization that claims to be interested in women's rights would celebrate the recent lawsuit against Backpage, the online brothel, which has resulted in the oppression of countless sex workers and rewarded countless sex traffickers, and was trafficking in children. But then again, the Women's March is being led by Linda Sarsour, whose vision of feminism allows female genital mutilation and mandated burkas. So I don't know what this organization really stands for. First, the Assistant U.S. Attorney Elizabeth Strange described internal documents and emails from Backpage as, quote, shocking in their callousness. She added, Backpage has earned hundreds of millions of dollars from facilitating prostitution and sex trafficking, placing profits over the well-being and safety of the many thousands of women and children who are victimized by its practices, end quote. Now, there was almost universal applause for shutting down Backpage. It isn't really a partisan issue at all. Most people and most policymakers agree that online sex trafficking is bad, but it is objectively illegal when you are knowingly trafficking in children. There is no use offering objective realities to the brand of the fourth wave feminism practiced by the Women's March, however. The Women's March just tweeted, quote, the shutting down of hashtag Backpage is an absolute crisis for sex workers who rely on the site to safely get in touch with clients. Sex workers' rights are women's rights, end quote. In the coming days, the next tweet, we will be sharing more about sex workers' rights to uplift this critical issue. We're all still learning, and as always, we have to listen to the voices of those most impacted. Hashtag sex work is work. The hashtag alone, sex work is work, makes no sense at all. How about sex work is illegal, or sex work is dangerous? Sex work is destructive. Hashtag sex work is harmful and demeaning. How about sex work, I'm sorry, hashtag sex work hurts children. Most sex workers are confined to a life of addiction, desperation, control, and manipulation. What world is the Women's March living in? They rally around the Me Too movement, but they don't understand that prostitution, sex trafficking, and sex work are aggressive forms of sexual assault. Even if the Women's March want to turn sex work into a powerful women's scenario, it has been proven that a lot of the powerful women on Backpage were being prostituted against their will. In fact, a lot of the powerful women weren't women at all. They were underage kids. This latest iteration of feminism needs to reassess what's important. They've jumped the shark a long, long time ago. At times, it feels like coordinated contrarianism. They're just opposed to whatever else anybody else is for. And we're going to decide to hate everything that is white, everything that is male, everything that is capitalism, everything that is conservative. Doesn't matter if it's a good idea or a bad idea. It falls into that box. Why else would you support sex work and the Islamic understanding of burqas equally? Or at all. At least, can you come up with a narrative that makes the slightest bit of sense?
It's Tuesday, April 10th.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So we've been focusing on a lot of stuff today, and we're going to get back to the president's attorney and what all of that means and what exactly happened in just a second. But I wanted to stop and share with you some good news. Yesterday, I told you about two guys, Mike Warren and Chris Lang. They created something called Open Source Roads in Indiana. It's a grassroots organization that decided enough is enough. Our roads are horrible, and we have to fix them. And the state and the city said, well, it'll take about $700 and some million to fix them all. And so these guys just got together. I mean, Chris is a libertarian activist, and he was doing, you know, government outreach. He was doing journalism, yada, yada, yada. And he decided, you know what? We're just going to get some asphalt and some friends, and we're just going to fix it ourselves. And so far, it's going well. We have Chris Lang on the phone with us now. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Pretty good, Glenn. How about yourself?
Very good. Congratulations on this. And you give me hope. You and Mike give me hope, and all the guys that are working with you.
Thank you. Yeah, we get that a lot. And it's good to hear that kind of positive feedback. Really reaffirms what we're doing.
Now, I do want to say that I do believe the man is going to come and crush you to death. For doing this. I mean, you're an accident or a lawsuit away, or just somebody who has a bug up their butt that wants to crush you for thinking and doing something on your own. You realize that, right?
I realize, picking my words here very carefully,
yes.
I realize that the city has its own procedure for how they would like the road work to be done. And while they might argue about specific materials used and the way the labor is performed, I understand their biggest concern is safety. However, to me, this problem has expanded. First of all, this whole thing was founded on, a lot of people think we're just trying to fill in the potholes here. And the problem is bigger than that, because a pothole isn't just a pothole. These are failures that our city has allowed to continue for years, by moving the funds to places where they shouldn't be, just not spending funds specifically allocated for these repairs in general. And the issue has become safety in the universal sense. When you drive through Indianapolis, it's almost like everyone's driving through a mapped out minefield. You're watching the road 10 feet in front of you. You can't even look up at the cars around you because you don't feel safe unless you're swerving vehemently and sometimes lane killing potholes. So to us, if the city is going to come down on us, we are understanding that might be an issue, but we are willing to contend that the safety of the city is already at risk, and what we're doing is necessary, not just some, you know, kids filling in potholes. And the whole point to this process, the whole point to this activism, was to draw attention that specific fact. So if the city wants to give us more attention by trying to stop us from fixing their own problem, then, man, that's just going to turn more heads their way, you know?
So, Chris, I love this because the system has failed, and you've decided that you're not going to just sit around and watch it fail, and you're not going to do something destructive. You're not somebody standing on the sidelines going, burn the whole thing down. You're actually just going to say, you're just saying, we're going to roll up our sleeves and we're going to fix it ourselves because we have a right to.
Personally, the burn the whole thing down would not be entirely opposed by me, but yes, I would say that it is important. And that was the whole point, was we could argue all day about the legislative process and what needs to go into it and who needs to be taxed what. But this is part of me and Mike's activism in general. You know, discussion can go on for so long, but while we're debating, people are swerving potholes, people are crashing and getting in accidents on our roads. We're getting overtime in repair shops. You know, like other great issues Mike and I have faced, like mass incarceration or trying to stand with anti-war and anti-interventionist groups. Like, these are big ideas, but this is one of the ones we can directly and bipartisanly do something about. And that's pretty much what the whole focus of the project has been.
So I have a kind of you know, some might say a stupid question, some might say, you know, a highly technical question.
I was always told there's no such thing as dumb questions.
Well, good, because where the hell do you even buy asphalt? I don't even know where you would get that.
That's the thing. It's like it seems like there's a lot of steps in this process, and that's inevitably what the whole permit-seeking mindset has created in people. Everyone thinks there's a million things you'd have to check off before your first pothole. We got $50 of fundraising material. We went to Menards, and we asked an employee to show us where pothole mix was, and there it was, big black bags just labeled pothole patch. I couldn't even tell you the brand of them. It's just so generic and straightforward. And everything else, we just learned on the internet. We sweep out the holes, which is, by the way, more than what the city does. In fact, most of our repair work is more than what the city does. And everything else is just our own personal experience. At this point, we're kind of experts on the matter.
I have great respect for you, Chris. I really do. I think what you guys are doing is fantastic. I love the way you spoke about the anarchist in Oregon that you saw, you know, do basically the same thing in Oregon, and you say, well, I'm not an anarchist, but that's a good idea, and you guys did it, and I think the spirit of people just saying, go ahead.
A little clarification on that was that Indy Star quoted us as saying we're not anarchists, and what I would, and they were correct on that quote, but what I was implying more was that group tends to be anarchist socialist, whereas we're more propertarian anarchists, a little more on the libertarian side of anarchists, but we are anarchists, and a lot of the philosophy behind what we do has been rooted in anarchism and individual self-reliance, you know?
Okay, so let me just, because anarchy gets a really bad name because it's anarchy, there is a difference between anarchy, everybody fend for yourself. There is no law. There is no rule. There is no justice, or, you know, it's Mad Max. And then there is the, you know, the constitutional anarchy as designed by our founders, to where you are responsible for almost everything in your life. The government is only going to do just the very, very basic. Is that the kind of anarchy you mean? Or the, you know, Mad Max.
I have to it all down, Mad Max.
Yeah.
Well, I played enough video games to tell you that the Mad Max scenario sounds pretty scary.
Yeah.
I definitely, though, am still founding a lot of my personal philosophical beliefs. But I do believe in a principled anarchy, the idea that there would be no forced hierarchies. And a big word I'd stick with is voluntarist, which is no one is compelled to do anything off of their property by force.
Yeah, okay.
And a big part of that is my universal application of that. And so, yeah, I think my anarchy isn't Mad Max. It's more of, think of like a homeowners organization and how it maintains a neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yet everyone chooses to live within the neighborhood. No one is forced to.
Correct.
That on a global scale is a pretty broad terms what I believe in.
So can I ask you a question? How are people, and this is an honest question, how are people anarchists and socialists?
So that was the question that I first, because I came from a fairly conservative family, and when I first, you know, moved through my political compass, I came across libertarianism. When I heard about libertarian socialism, that sounded like an oxymoron to me. And I still don't identify or agree with a lot of the base socialist principles, but in the theory, I understand it. And I still look for a lot of answers in the execution. But what I see a lot of anarcho-socialists argue for is that the hierarchies themselves of the government don't exist, but democratic hierarchies where people within societies choose universal ways to distribute goods exist. I don't really hold these views.
Yeah.
That's kind of in general terms how I've come to understand it.
Yeah. Okay. Chris, congratulations. Thank you so much. If you start getting heat anywhere, you let us know, will you?
Definitely. I would be glad to get some public eye on that.
Yeah. And we have a story that is on this now at glenbeck.com. If you want to know how you can help and get involved, go to glenbeck.com, look for the article, No Permit, No Problem, and it will guide you to their GoFundMe page, and you can help them not tear up the streets, but actually repair the streets and see if they can change things in Indianapolis. Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Good talking to you.
So, Stu, I have socialist anarchists down. Yeah. Just mean burn it all down, but then the majority rules, and we can elect a few leaders through majority, and then they'll tell everybody how to live.
Sure.
Is that?
I don't know.
That's what it sounded like.
Penn Jillette describes himself as an anarcho-capitalist.
Yes.
Which seems similar to what he's kind of talking about.
Right.
Here.
And that I understand. Yes. Everybody just lives, and it's more like Ayn Rand.
Right. You know, anarcho-socialists, I don't know.
Because it eventually means that somebody has to have a gun and force everybody else to do things. So I don't get that. But.
No.
Glenn Beck.
All right. Can we have an intellectual conversation here? For a moment, and take all emotion out on both sides and have an intellectual conversation. This is a conversation I've heard before in the past, maybe 30 years ago, but I've never really agreed with it because I didn't think the times warranted it. And I also didn't think that, I believe in law and order. But the federal attorney of Southern New York, this is a guy who, you know, interviewed with Donald Trump, the FBI agents that asked for this warrant or passed it on to the federal attorney. Was there any kind of conversation at all? And should there have been on, yes, this is a problem, and yes, we have this situation, and I don't know what it is, but maybe let's wait for a little bit. Imagine, look at what the president is going through today. He has Syria, Russia, China, North Korea. All of those are just war pieces. And I don't want to stop law and order on, you know, war pieces or anything else. It's important that we are clean all the way. But it is also a massive distraction if the federal attorney and the FBI don't have rock hard evidence on Michael Cohen, if they don't have if they are not buttoned up on arresting the president's, or I'm sorry, on raiding the president's attorney's office, this is really dangerous, the way this has been pulled off, and at a very dangerous time. We have, I looked up the headline today, and it was, we're waiting for the White House's response to Russia on the Syria gassing. And I had the first time since the 1980s, I had the feeling that I had when I was working in Washington, D.C., and KAL 007 was blown out of the sky by the Russians. It was a Korean airliner. And I remember this is in the time of, you know, Reagan saying it was an evil empire. And I remember waiting for the White House response and looking at the top of the Washington Monument and thinking, we're in ground zero. And this discussion is happening here. Please, cool heads prevail. What are the conversations like today with the Pentagon officials and a very angry President Trump?
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed, the show that follows us on the Blaze Radio Network at theblaze.com. Pat, let's talk a little bit about Michael Cohen and the extraordinary, historic measures that were taken yesterday in raiding the president's personal attorney's office.
Yeah. If they're after the president's personal attorney, I don't think any of the client privilege thing applies. Because if they're just after Cohen, you're just after the attorney, right?
Yes.
If that's what the ultimate goal is, to get him on campaign finance, and I think they probably can get him on that, then, you know, maybe this isn't inappropriate. But if they're after Trump, then it's definitely inappropriate.
But is this a, you know, the campaign finance, isn't this kind of what Obama raised or had, what's his name? Our friend used to be a professor in New York in the Empire State Building. He makes documentaries. He's Indian. He's an immigrant. He went to prison.
Dinesh
D'Souza. Thank you. Yeah. Wow. I felt like I was on Password all
the time. The password is Dinesh D'Souza.
But Dinesh D'Souza, I mean, this is what he went to jail for. A lot less. He went to prison for a lot less.
A lot less. Because all he did was give too much money to a candidate he wanted to give money to.
Correct.
That's all he did.
Right.
Well, this is a little different.
Yeah.
This is paying off somebody to protect the campaign.
It certainly violates the spirit of the law.
Yeah.
And, you know, they, as you point out, Dinesh D'Souza went to jail for far less than this. So it's possible they could come after Cohen that way. Again, that wouldn't necessarily reflect on Trump per se.
So, but
though, I mean, you know, there's certainly, you roll your eyes at the idea that he had no idea about this.
So here's the problem. Are they just using this on Cohen and hoping that they're going to find something else? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, Cohen is, I mean, let's be honest. There's a few people that we said, look, he doesn't surround himself with the best people. He surrounds himself with the worst people.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that we mentioned was Flynn,
Bannon,
Cohen.
Manafort.
And all of them, we've been right on all of those, okay? They're all gone. So
kind of seems like we were right on them.
Yeah, getting rid of these guys is a really good thing, because Cohen is, he's a bad guy. He is a bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's the type of person. Give me an example of this, because the issue is not with him, is not necessarily loyalty.
He'll go to jail.
I think he will.
He'll be Susan McDougal.
The problem is he's just a really crappy, corrupt lawyer. And this has been beneficial for Trump over the years, as far as, you know, he's aggressive. He uses bullying tactics to get things done, to make deals. That's been the way he does it. And Trump likes that he doesn't necessarily have to be the guy who does that type of stuff. The question is, if Cohen is a really competent lawyer, he can draw very bright lines around his activities that they may verge into the questionable and keep his client safe. It's his job to keep his client safe. But just to give you an idea of who this guy is, remember the story where Ivanka Trump, in a long ago interview and book, said she had been the victim of rape with Donald Trump. Ivanka said that. That's on the record. It's not questioned. She says she said it. She later said that, look, that wasn't real. I didn't mean rape. That's not what I was talking about. I was talking about, you know, an emotional sort of disconnect. And she came up with another kind of answer about it. And so let's just take that at the word for a moment. Because some people question whether that was true. But she's saying it. She's saying it now. Ivanka, the victim of this supposed rape, is saying it wasn't a rape. So, I mean, there's nothing we can do about that. I think we should take her at her word. So the Daily Beast, who is a terrible publication in many ways. many ways.
Yes.
In almost all ways.
Yes, in almost all ways. Decided they were going to run.
I mean, unless you're in hell.
Right? Yeah.
Then they're a trusted source.
Right? Yeah.
They decided they were going to run a story about Ivanka's quote about her being raped by Donald Trump. Now, of course, you know, the context was going to be questionable because it's the Daily Beast. But Michael Cohen got wind of this, and it was his gig to go in and stop the publication. Now, what he said to her, to the reporter who was going to write the story, was threatened, if you write a story that has Mr. Trump's name in it, the word rape, I'm going to mess your life up. Tread very effing lightly, because what I'm going to do to you is going to be effing disgusting. He said this to a reporter on the record. Okay, questionable. Because it's just, and what are you doing? You're calling names and you're being a bully.
You're threatening.
But that's exactly what Trump wants out of that role. Here's the part that's the problem, okay? He later on goes and says, he says, legally, there is no legal way to rape your wife. Quote, you cannot rape your spouse. There is very clear case law. Now, despite, pass for a moment beyond the concept of how reprehensible this idea is, that a woman, because she puts a wedding ring on, gives the man immunity to sexually assault her at will, whenever he wants. The concept is so incredibly reprehensible, it's hard to believe it was ever a factor in law going back hundreds and hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
However, it was law in New York until 1984. Now stop for a second.
It was until 1984.
1984 was overturned.
You couldn't rape your wife.
It was a big story. And there were a lot of states going back. Look, women couldn't vote.
Mm-hmm.
There were slaves. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of really terrible laws in this country that eventually were overturned. The idea that you could rape your wife was overturned in 1984. Big story. New York Times. It was a big thing. Michael Cohen is a lawyer practicing law in the state of New York.
And he doesn't know that was overturned.
30 plus years later, and he still thinks it's the law.
That's great.
He's such a terrible attorney.
Yeah.
That there's almost no way, if he did something wrong, he actually was capable of drawing these lines about around Donald Trump. And you might think, okay, during the the election, they were on their toes. The risk is there. By all reports, they didn't think they were actually going to win. So if they didn't win, there would be no case. There would be no legal recourse really going
on.
We
wouldn't have known
about
any
of this. We wouldn't have known about the meeting in Trump Tower. We wouldn't have known about any of that stuff if he wound up losing. But he wound up winning. And you might think maybe they were kind of protective. But a shady LLC to pay a porn star $130,000 a week before the election? Forget about like whether that's legally, whether he did it right or not. There's a lot of questions on that, but it's reckless behavior.
Yeah, and there's almost no way for him to have done it right.
Think about what this guy was doing in 1999 or 2005 when he didn't think he was in the middle of a presidential campaign.
Mm.
You know, again, he may have protected Trump. Trump may have had no idea of any of this, but the reason they get this, the ability to raid Michael Cohen's office because they have something, and it may be 20 years ago, but they have something that's so blatantly clear that he did something wrong.
Yeah, this decision,
is the illegal analysis of many.
This is something that both left and right are saying that this is significant. You just don't do this. This is historic what happened. And I'm afraid if they don't come out with something pretty damn quickly and they don't make it clear, this is not going to sit well with the American people, because I have to tell you, if you would go and arrest and break attorney-client privileges, even with Barack Obama, if you would have done that it just felt like this is a never-ending investigation and it's just kind of slipping into all kinds of stuff and it looked like a fishing expedition, I defend President Clinton. You don't break attorney-client privilege unless it is of extraordinary circumstance. So what is that circumstance? And it pays off.
And unless it's something involving Cohen and the campaign finance or something he's done in his past, I mean, if it involves the Russian thing, they don't even have any collusion evidence on that. There's nothing to back this up.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an investigation that probably should have ended a long time ago.
And we haven't seen the results of it yet, of course. I mean, and, you know, Cohen, again, in the middle of the time where Trump is saying to the public, I have no Russian connections, I have no Russian deals.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Cohen, maybe completely on his own, is trying to close the deal of Trump Tower Moscow.
See, this is where it gets problematic.
Yeah, that's...
Again.
That's where it gets problematic.
Yeah.
If Michael Cohen is proven to be doing negotiations with Moscow for Trump Tower Moscow.
Yeah, that'd be a
problem. At the same time, there's a real problem here on, wait a minute, Mr. President.
Now, they'll say one had nothing to do with the other.
Yeah, right. That is absolutely, from a guy who said, I'm not going to separate my business and my presidency. I still have to stay in charge. I still have to know what's going on. And
that's why you do that, though.
There's no way. Yeah, I know. There's no way this guy didn't know that Moscow Trump Tower was being negotiated. Come on, there's no way.
It does
of course not.
It completely implausible. Now Cohen had a lot of uh, he had a lot of ability to investigate deals internationally. It was one of his main roles within the organization. So, I mean, it's not completely impossible, but the idea that
highly unlikely.
Highly unlikely, right? Highly unlikely. That doesn't mean that there was collusion, by the way. It just means that he wasn't telling the truth when he was talking about business deals in Russia.
Yeah, right.
That does not mean, however, that they've affected the election or anything like that.
Yeah, Cohen could go to jail for a million reasons or, you know, be in trouble for a million reasons that have nothing to do, that doesn't sully Donald Trump, other than he, you know, worked with a scumbag attorney. But that's already baked into the price of Donald Trump. We all knew that.
Yeah, we all knew that.
Yeah,
we all knew that. So what's the new thing here? Oh, his attorney's a scumbag and maybe doing illegal things.
Huh.
You know.
Just from a PR perspective, can you think of a worse move than calling up a reporter on the record saying you can't rape your spouse and associating your client with that? With that point, his on-the-record defense is you can't legally rape your spouse.
When you don't so much as Google it to make sure what you're saying is accurate.
It's been gone for 33 years.
I guarantee you could Google that and find the law in New York.
Yeah, it was a big story at the time.
So let's say that they do come back and say, okay, he campaign finance, he broke the laws with campaign finance, he's going to jail. But they don't find anything that shows that Donald Trump was colluding with him on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does that affect the president at all?
I don't think it does.
It's
already been baked in. We know about him. We knew about him during the campaign.
And
we talked about it many times, what a douchebag Cohen is.
He's a bad guy. And he's as close to a family member as they have in the organization. So he's going to be very loyal, very protective. And to this point, it's actually better for Michael Cohen if Donald Trump did give him the $130,000 for Stormy Daniels. Because Donald Trump is not limited for campaign contributions. There's a normal limit of, $3,000 or $4,000, where Michael Cohen can't do that. And it's seen as an in-kind contribution. If you're donating money to someone to pay somebody off.
I don't think he did it. I don't think Donald Trump gave him the money. I really don't. Trump is not the kind. I mean, he didn't put his own money into the campaign, really. I mean,
a little bit,
but he was also doing campaign was paying for all of the stops at his hotels. So he was making that money back. He's just not the guy to do that.
Worse for Cohen if Trump didn't pay him back.
Yeah. Right.
And doesn't make a difference on Trump either way.
It's my point of loyalty. It looks bad for Trump if he gave $130,000 to a porn star, which is why they put it through an LLC. And it's why they put it through Michael Cohen.
I don't think his supporters will care.
Right, right. But that's why they did it, right? To protect Trump in the general election a week before the election, right? That's absolutely clear. And you could say that it might have been Michael Cohen who did it.
It's a dumb payoff because nobody would have cared.
Probably not.
As we see now, nobody would have cared.
Nobody would have cared. In fact, the story was already out there. Yeah. And still people
didn't care. We didn't elect the pastor in chief. I mean, we already baked this in too.
All right. So my point,
really
though, is
can I tell you something? It really is. I could walk outside and I could shoot somebody in the street and nobody's going to care.
About it at the time. It really, he is that Teflon.
He is.
He is.
My point, though, is with loyalty, right? Michael Cohen, by saying, hey, by even leaving it open that I got some of this money from Trump, would protect himself from going to prison. And he's the one out there saying, I didn't get the money from Trump.
No, he is.
He's exposing himself legally.
You remember Susan McDougal.
Yeah.
I mean, she went to jail for the Clintons. This guy will go to jail. And I'm not saying that Trump did anything wrong, but he'll go to jail before he would turn anything.
I think so, too.
Yeah, he'll go to jail. He's a loyal, loyal guy.
Mm-hmm. Glenn Beck.
You know, why do we all get up every day and do what we do? I do it because I know who you are. I just want to, earlier today, we had Frank Luntz on in hour number one, and I kind of worried about him, and apparently you did too. I just got a note from Frank. Glenn, I want to let you know the response I've received from your radio audience is incredible. I've had more people email messages of encouragement than anything that I've done. And they all reference the brutality of politics and how we all have to find a better way. Music to my ears and to yours as well. I get up every day because I know who you are. We'll see you tonight at 5 o'clock and back here on the radio tomorrow.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.